Mônica Vasconcelos, a singer and producer with the BBC World Service. In this program, Brazil, Confronting the Past, I revisit one of the darkest chapters in Brazilian history. And I travel with a burning question. Will my country learn from its history of suffering? My journey is a personal one, the seeds implanted in my childhood growing up in São Paulo. This old, perhaps 1930s building here is Godofredo Furtado School in the Pinheiros neighborhood. It was here that I discovered music and fell in love with it forever. Political songs with secret coded messages in them, which I did not understand at the time. Say, Aparecida, tell me, what's wrong? Where have you disappeared to? And it was when I was a 10-year-old student here that my father warned me. Do not gather in groups outside school after class. Why that tension in his voice? Why that fear? That's what I want to find out. And what prompted my journey was a novel simply called K, about Brazil's military dictatorship. It's by the Brazilian writer and retired academic Bernardo Kuczynski.
It was a personal necessity to write that book and by this to put an end to the story. But what happened is the opposite.
What happened is that when Bernardo Kuczynski published the novel, people started asking questions about the military dictatorship. And what happened to me is that the book began a journey, this journey.
This is a never-ending story. Where are the bodies? Who were the main culprits? Why they are not punished? I don't believe much will change in this setting. I mean, no one will be punished.
Survivors can only live in the present for a while. Once they've got over the shock of having survived, once they've managed to resume normal life, the demons of the past re-emerge with unimaginable vigor.
The book K tells the story of a father desperately searching for his disappeared political activist daughter during the military dictatorship in Brazil. It reads as fiction, but it's based on a true story. The disappeared woman, Ana Rosa Kuczynski, is the author Bernardo Kuczynski's sister.
Kay recalled his recent contacts with his daughter, her nervousness, her evasive answers, her habit of arriving in a hurry and leaving in a hurry, her insistence he should only go to her house in an emergency and not pass her address on to anyone. With dismay, he realized just how far he had been deceiving himself, tricked by his own daughter, who was perhaps involved in extremely dangerous activities without him realizing it.
The military dictatorship started in Brazil in 1964, after a coup on the 31st of March, 50 years ago now. It lasted for 21 years. During this time, there was no political freedom, and although some might argue the repression was less brutal, at least in numbers, than in Argentina and other Latin American countries, there were killings, torture, and fear. Here I am at my dad's surgery in São Paulo. We haven't talked much about the dictatorship. Even now, my father is wary of that time. But I finally ask him the question. Dad, remember that day when you warned me not to gather in groups outside school? Why did you say that?
Foi justamente a partir de 70.
It was precisely after 1970 that the most repressive government began. Brazil was well economically, we won the World Cup, but repression was awful.
But that's not all. To understand that fear in my father's voice, I must go back to the state of Goiás, deep in the Brazilian country, in the 1930s. My grandfather had moved there, like a pioneer, to tame the land.
O papai deve ter visto, provavelmente, muita miséria.
My father must have seen the extreme poverty. He was a man of ideals and dreams.
Influenced by the ideas of a Brazilian communist leader, my grandfather joined the Camisas Vermelhas, or Red Shirts Party. He would pay a high price for that.
Algum governo ligado
Some government authority linked to Nazi ideologies took him to prison. He told me he was tortured, he was tied up, beaten and whipped under military guard.
Grandpa survived and moved with the family to another state. He had lost everything. But 30 years later, in 1964, his communist past would catch up with him.
When the 64 coup happened, my father and 11 other comrades were denounced. They were imprisoned for 18 days.
This time, Grandpa wasn't tortured. But his experience of persecution, torture, violence, and impoverishment stayed with us. And when I asked my father, "Dad, is it difficult talking about the dictatorship now?" I hear that fear again, so many years later. And the same warning.
Claro que é difícil, porque a ditadura continua aí, Tota.
Of course it's difficult, because the dictatorship is still around. The torturers are still here. They are free. So it's very dangerous to talk about it, including you. You have to be careful.
When he says that, I'm not sure if he's being paranoid or whether his fear is justified. Finding the answer to this is part of my journey also. And along the way, I'll be meeting some of the people who are now, so many years later, tackling the legacy of the dictatorship. But first, let me tell you a bit more about those dark years. In the 1960s and 70s, the Cold War was at its height. For the author of the book K, political scientist Bernardo Kuczynski, the context was everything. Declassified communications between the US ambassador to Brazil and President Kennedy showed that the Americans were instrumental in the coup.
The Brazilian coup, all the coups in Latin America, they have to be seen within this framework of the Cold War, by which to defeat communism, all means are legitimate, are acceptable. So it was the Cold War really that led to the coup.
Around 50,000 people are imprisoned in just the first few weeks, including my grandfather and later one Ana Rosa Kuczynski. Resistance to the coup is confined to a few small groups. They organize protests trying to mobilize the population against the coup. 1968, as the regime tightens its grip, shutting down Congress and suspending political rights, the resistance becomes more violent. Activists resort to tactics like kidnappings. Added to this mix is the role of the army, which, according to Bernardo Kuczynski, has always been used by the elite as a tool for repression.
So the Brazilian army has this social function of repressing. The same can be said about the police. I mean, the police was created in Brazil, first of all, to repress the slave who rebelled, to hunt them and to kill them. And till today, the Brazilian society is a very slave-minded society, if we can use this expression. I mean, you have an aristocracy who see the rest of the people with derision, with disrespect.
1974. Oblivious to the fact that his own sister is involved in the political struggle, Bernardo Kuczynski is living in London and working for the very Brazilian section of the BBC World Service, BBC Brazil, where I now work. Telephone communications aren't safe. His father travels to London to give the news. Ana Rosa has disappeared.
Well, when it happens, you don't have much time to think. I mean, you start rushing, talking to people, trying to find what happened, trying to get some information, and then traveling here and there. I went even to the United States to talk to some authorities there. So this takes about 2-3 months when you realize that the worst happened. And then it's really shocking.
Finally, in 2012, a former police chief called Claudio Guerra says he disposed of the bodies of Ana Rosa and her husband by cremating them at a sugarcane processing plant in 1974. He describes the condition of the bodies.
Those were human bodies. She was very bruised. She was probably raped, and the cause of death must have been suffocation. There were no bullet perforations on the bodies.
Ana Rosa was 32 years old. But by the end of the 1970s, the climate is changing. Brazil tries to put its past behind it by sweeping it under the carpet. In 1979, the amnesty law is passed, giving amnesty to all, political activists and the military. Forgiveness becomes a pact of silence and shuts the mouths of all who endured the horrors of that period. And it will take them 40 years to be allowed to speak again. The left regains power in Brazil in 2003. Former factory worker and union leader Lula da Silva becomes the president. His successor, current president Dilma Rousseff, suffered torture at the hands of the military dictatorship. Still, only after 2010, when the Inter-American Court of Human Rights orders Brazil to investigate the crimes of the dictatorship, a truth commission is finally created. But the truth had been coming out, at first, in private.
Once, I was alone in the house for almost a whole morning. I went down to the backyard to see for myself. The garage didn't have a window. The door was locked with a chain and padlock. A wooden door. But I could peer in through the hole they'd made in the door for the hosepipe.
A climactic scene from the book K. It's a fictional account of a therapy session. The traumatized cleaner of the house where activists were tortured and killed tells a therapist of the horrors she's witnessed.
Jesuína gives a deep moan and starts to cry. Soon her crying takes her over completely, and she begins to convulse, slowly slipping from her chair. The therapist catches her before she hits the floor, pulls her up and hugs her. They both stand there, crying.
I am sitting at a very nice room. It is a psychotherapist's room, and I am talking to Moisés Silva, psychoanalyst. Thank you for having me here.
Okay, um prazer. Mais do que fazer falar, a tortura.
The aim of torture is not to make one speak, but to silence you, to make silent through fear, submission, and belittling. Torture and violence aim at breaking the ties. Rebuilding them is essential. The prisoners who could come back to the cells and be comforted by other prisoners had a very different outcome from the ones who were thrown back into solitary cells.
So is the aim finding a vocabulary to convey, to give names to what happened, so it can be dealt with?
Os grupos são lugares de muito sofrimento também.
The groups are places of much suffering as well. Because these words come with a lot of pain and suffering, they are not dissociated from the pain of the body.
Moisés' comments bring back to me the suffering and fear I heard in my father's voice. So I tell him about my difficult conversation with Dad.
Quando você falava da tua experiência, eu pensava...
When you spoke about your experience, I thought how many years this father had to remain so alone. And how many years this daughter had to keep silent the questions that could have made her father speak. The conversation was about the family history, but also about the country's history.
Can this festering wound in the Brazilian social body be healed?
Parte dessa chaga tem
These clinics will not be enough to heal this. The medicine that will help cure this wound is justice.
This is the Truth Commission of the State of São Paulo. Its aim is to investigate violations committed here and to report them to the National Truth Commission in Brasília. The Truth Commission doesn't have legal powers. It cannot prosecute the responsible for those crimes. Yet, I find it hard to express in words the symbolic significance of what is happening here. Victims come and share their horrors. The accused come and give their versions of what happened. There is pain, anger, sometimes there are shouts, confrontations, and tears. Stories of babies being brought into the torture chamber. Did you know that? Did you know that in torture sessions, babies were used as an instrument to make the parents talk?
Meu comando, meu senhor doutor Panteres. Ninguém foi morto lá dentro do DOI.
Testimonies can be highly charged. In this example, Colonel Brilhante Ustra, accused of sadistic torture and killings, speaks to the National Truth Commission. Colonel Ustra is currently a defendant in two criminal prosecutions in cases of forced disappearances. He's been found liable for torture by a civil court and ordered to pay compensation. Civil actions, however, do not impose jail terms. Ivan Seixas is the president of the São Paulo Truth Commission.
The National Truth Commission has the legal power to summon people, like in the case of Colonel Ustra. Ustra was ordered to attend and initially denied everything, but then lost his cool and began shouting and banging at the table, revealing himself for the torturer he is. The need to attribute responsibility and judge these people does not just relate to past torturers. Leaving them unpunished is an incentive to the torturers of today. Once, a police chief told me he had long wanted to meet me. I asked, why? Because when I did the police academy, the torture teachers told us about your case. So I said, what? Torture classes? And he confirmed and gave me names of some of his teachers, some of whom had tortured me. They would say, you cannot torture, but if you could, you should do it this way. And they would proceed teaching you the torture techniques. And they would use my story as a case study. The problem is not that they use my story. It's that torture is still taught today.
The remit of the Truth Commission is to establish the facts and make recommendations so that the responsible are punished. Meanwhile, federal prosecutors have begun 100 investigations and have filed 6 criminal prosecutions against abuses of the dictatorship. But progress is slow. The amnesty law of 1979 still poses obstacles. And investigating crimes committed so long ago is not easy. So today, 50 years after the coup, not one of those responsible for human rights violations during the dictatorship has gone to prison. Some activists are impatient. Young filmmakers Paula Saqueta and Peu Robles decided to make a film, Verdade 12528, to denounce the abuses of the regime. Their harrowing documentary features testimonies of victims of torture. Other activists go even further.
Well, my name is Tatiana Merlino. I'm 37 years old. My mother's brother was a journalist and a militant against the dictatorship, and he was killed in 1971. He was tortured until death for 4 days.
Tatiana Merlino belongs to a group that outs former collaborators of the regime to their communities. People like torturers or doctors who signed false death certificates. The activists go to the person's house, put up posters, and talk to the locals. But aren't they just vigilantes?
We are not breaking into their houses. We don't want justice with our own hands. I think it's a very democratic way to express our indignation with the impunity, because we didn't punish the torturers from the past. Torture is still happening in Brazil now. The difference is that the target of the violence today are the people, the black, poor, that live in the outskirts.
If you put signs indicating that a torturer lives at that home, is there a danger that the population might go there and attack this guy?
I don't think.
Has it happened?
No, it didn't happen. But if the population attacks him, we are going to call the police to stop the population, because what we want is to show what he did.
You know, how do you make sure you are not doing something unfair to someone who is innocent?
Well, we do this long and careful research. We ask the neighbors, we call, and we try to be sure that this person really lives there.
There is, however, more than one side to every story. I'm sitting in an air-conditioned taxi in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. The temperature outside is 38 degrees Celsius. In the book K, the main character also travels to Rio to talk to a general, like myself. And as I travel through this beautiful city, I find myself wondering whether Bernardo Kosinski or his father, the real-life K, ever came here to Rio to talk to the military about Ana Rosa. The building I'm looking for is the Quartel-General do Comando Militar do Leste, the East Military Command HQ at Avenida Presidente Vargas in the center of Rio. R$ 25. O senhor me faz recibo, por favor. Obrigada.
I'm Brigadier General, currently in the reserve, Durval Antunes Machado Pereira de Andrade Neri.
I have a feeling the general wants to intimidate me. He places a recording machine at the table to record our conversation. He defends, justifies, and is proud of the dictatorship.
The Soviet Union was trying to get into the American continent via the south. They had already tried in 1935 with Carlos Prestes.
So, to defeat the communist threat, the military resorted to war tactics. And in a war, you torture to get valuable information that might save lives. So, what about torture?
Who is the innocent person who was tortured? I challenge you to give me the name of someone innocent who was tortured. The ones who were tortured participated.
Participated in what? The general had examples in mind.
If anyone was tortured, it was at the moment of imprisonment. To make them speak, for example, about a planned kidnapping. When was it supposed to happen? At what time? So you beat them to make them talk.
When I ask him about the disappeared, the general says there are no disappeared. There are only enemies killed in combat. Some of them carried fake IDs, he says, so the military couldn't properly identify them. I ask him about Bernardo's sister, Ana Rosa Kosinski. He says he's never heard of her.
You've just mentioned a person. I don't remember the name. I don't know who she is.
Some of the general's replies make a strong impression on me, and I find myself interpreting them.
Nobody died from wasted bullets.
I think by this he means that all who died deserved to die.
Direitos humanos existe, mas
human rights exist, but for those who obey law and order.
Here, General Neri reproduces Brazilians' dislike for human rights because they are often seen as just giving rights to criminals.
You must go to extremes. I mean extremes, so you win the war. You eliminate the enemy, the criminal.
When he says this, I think he means he has no regrets. Towards the end of a difficult, tense interview, I briefly stop the recording. The general looks at me and in a strange voice asks, "Why are you here?" "Because you haven't told me." Now, I have become a suspect. Of course I had told him why I was there. I feel like I'm being interrogated, and his tactics work. I think of my grandfather, of my father. I remember my father's warning. Be careful. And this time, I think he was right. This is the sound of Rio, away from the beaches, away from the city center, near the hills, still covered in tropical forests. I take comfort in the singing of the birds. I came out of the interview with the general with a heavy heart, a feeling that, 50 years later, nothing has changed in Brazil. And if my father was right, perhaps Bernardo Kosinski too is right. No one will be punished, and Brazil will carry on as it always has, a country of inequality, injustice, and hardship, if you happen to be poor or black, or if you dare to disagree.
Our culture is authoritarian. We are authoritarian in our family relations, teaching, in academic relations, in government and in interpersonal relations is a cultural thing, but is very deep rooted in our culture, this authoritarian attitude. This culture is part of the pattern of class domination in Brazil.
So, when you see our beautiful football in the World Cup, when you hear our glorious music, or when you come to party with us during Carnival, don't think that this is what we are. Since colonial times, when slaves danced and sang and longed for freedom, what we have been doing is resisting. What you are seeing is a culture of resistance. Say, Aparecida, speak and break the silence. Speak. There is no denying. When you hide the truth, there is only fear and lying. Diz e denuncia que a verdade escondida é mentira, é medo. Diz Aparecida. Freedom.